You're listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast. Our guest today is Danish Chaudhry, Managing Director of the Bitcoin.com Exchange. This episode is brought to you by the Bitcoin.com Exchange, the exchange you can trust. Buy and sell Bitcoin as well as 250 digital assets. The Bitcoin.com Exchange is secure, fast, easy, and reliable. Register within seconds and buy crypto with a credit or debit card. Join our community of traders now. Exchange.bitcoin.com. I'm your host, Dustin Plantholt. Join us as we dive into the world of economics, politics, tech, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. For even more crypto-related news, sign up at news.bitcoin.com or follow us on Twitter at Bitcoin.com. Now let's bring on our guest. Danish, welcome to the Bitcoin.com podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Every time we're together, you give me a recap, but you also teach me something new about the market. So I thought today for the show, we'd really just dig into the fundamentals, some of the basics, but also some of the things that people are most afraid of. Does that sound good?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
So cryptocurrency, I also hear this word digital assets. Are they the same thing?
So cryptocurrency itself is an overarching, a generalized term to classify Bitcoin, Ethereum, various other tokens, all this sort of stuff. It's kind of like more of a generalized term. Now, cryptocurrency itself sometimes could refer to basic tokens that people use as a means of payment or a means of transactions or thing, hence the term currency. But then there's also like digital assets. Now, digital assets can include cryptocurrency because it's a digital good, but digital assets could also include digital goods that exist in the blockchain. So for example, things are called non-fungible tokens. So they're NFTs for short. Now, those would be like a piece of art that's created and attached to the blockchain. They're unique, they're non-fungible in the sense that, you know, it really is that nobody can copy it, nobody can, steal it in effect can steal it, but nobody can forge it or that sort of thing. So those are digital assets as well. And digital assets could really be, you know, anything that can be tokenized and put on the chain. So CryptoKitties, as an example, is a digital asset, right? Those are unique kitties that are bred on the blockchain. Feel free to ask me questions about if it's getting a little too in-depth sort of thing. And so it could be like, for example, some supply chain projects tokenize contracts, for example, on the blockchain, right? So you can use tools to view them. Everybody has access to them. They're non-forgeable. You can't fake them, et cetera. So those are digital assets as well. So digital assets itself is like another generalized term. So sometimes cryptocurrencies and digital assets overlap, and sometimes, you know, there's various things that various assets that are different. They're purely digital assets, and cryptocurrencies are purely currencies used for the means of transacting or trading. So
that's a great way of putting it. So the coins and tokens, do you actually own the companies that support them? I mean, when I own stocks, I mean, I do feel as if I have some sort of ownership.
Yeah, so there's different types of tokens. Obviously, in a traditional sense of the word, an equity means that you own a piece of the company. Now, that is governed and measured by regulation that's in the system, right? So from a regulatory and a financial perspective, equity is a piece of a company, and, you know, everybody recognizes it, government recognizes it, et cetera. In the digital asset space, we have different types of tokens. Now, the most common type of token is a utility token. And the other type of token that is most like an equity is a security token. Now, a security token, for example, is a token that gives you a piece of the company's equity. It's a digital representation of the equity of the company. Or it gives you access to a company's revenues or dividends or any financial sort of financial sort of kickback in that sense, or financial remuneration. And those are security tokens that are regulated. They perform like equities. They trade on exchanges that are regulated. And, you know, not anybody can come out and launch one and trade, et cetera, because there's financial ramifications, there's legal ramifications. Those are security tokens. The most common type of token that people see around are utility tokens. Now, utility tokens can perform various functions. Now, utility tokens could be, they have a utility attached to them, by definition, a utility attached to them that is a function of the blockchain they're on or the company they're a product of. There is an element of like what we call the Howey test. The Howey test is three different questions that determine if a token is a security or if it's a utility. And that's true for all equities as well. So those that don't fall within the Howey test are utility tokens. And utility tokens could be giving you access to membership to a platform. They can give you, you know, a certain they can pay you some sort of interest. They can be used for payments and so on and so forth. So utilities are everything that isn't a security token, which in fact is access to the company's equity or revenues. In a loose sense of the word, in the loose definition sort of thing, those are two different types of tokens.
That's a great way of explaining it. Now, I've also been hearing this term more and more called OTC. And I know that's not a medication, yeah. But what does that mean in terms of crypto or with digital assets?
So OTC transactions, OTC is basically a means of a transaction. Now, an OTC transaction means an over-the-counter transaction. That means that you are not going through an exchange. You're not posting orders on the order books. You're not buying and selling through a payment provider. An OTC transaction is something that is done generally in a large size and direct with a customer without having to go through something like Bitcoin.com exchange, for example, or you know, a payment provider of sorts. So, do you know, there's Local Bitcoins used to be a site back in the day. I don't know if it's still active or not. But we also have local.bitcoin.com. That's where people come and post, hey, I've got 10,000 Bitcoin for sale. I'm going to sell it for $1 a pop, for example. And the other person goes, okay, I like that. And you go and you exchange in person or you exchange digitally, whatever. That's an OTC transaction. In traditional financial terms, financial ways, like, so my background was in asset management, and while at BlackRock, you know, we would do trades which were billions of dollars in size, and in traditional markets, you cannot just go out and sell $1 billion of stock on the NASDAQ or on the NYSE. What you would do is you'd probably do an OTC transaction or do block trades, for example, where I'd be like, hey, I've got $100 million of X stock available. Can we find a buyer? Broker goes out, finds a buyer, and then we do a transaction that is technically over-the-counter and off the exchange books so that, you know, it doesn't signal to the rest of the market that transaction has happened or taken place. So for example, if you and I were to have a transaction between us, I would say, hey, Dustin, I've got 10 BCH. I want to sell it for $250 each. You'll be like, okay, great. I've got $250 in my bank account, $250 times 10. So like $2,500 in my bank account. Should I just send it directly to you? And we kind of make that transaction. That's an over-the-counter transaction rather than you saying, oh, let me post it on the exchange, place an order, somebody else could buy the order, somebody else could buy part of that order sort of thing. So an OTC is a direct transaction between the buyer and the seller in that sense.
That's a great way of explaining it. So let's talk about tokens, how to create them. So what is this process? I mean, it seems to be fascinating that people are able to create, and I'm not a programmer, but what is this thing? How do you create a token?
So, yeah, a token is a, so let's talk about token in an Ethereum sense of the word, right? Obviously, there's tokens that are more on you know, the proof of stakes type of tokens, kind of how Bitcoin is, Bitcoin Cash is, where there's different miners that solve complex mathematical problems. And as a result for solving those mathematical problems, you are given a cryptocurrency as a reward. It's called a mining reward. In Ethereum sense of the word, Ethereum is a what they call is the you know, like the blockchain supercomputer, Bitcoin blockchain supercomputer of the world. It's based on a programming language called Solidity. And you can kind of go ahead and create tokens on Ethereum, for example, by creating what's called a smart contract. And a smart contract is like kind of like a tri-party contract, which kind of verifies everything and makes sure there's no falsehoods within it. And it is what it is. It's like a smart contract, so people can interact with it, and it's got certain rules within it that it always enforces. There is no one person that has to enforce the rules of a contract. By creating these smart contracts, you can also mint tokens, quote unquote mint tokens. You go say, hey, I want to mint 1 million tokens. The program goes, okay, here's 1 million tokens, here's your circulation, you can keep it in your wallet. And basically it's using code to create tokens that you could keep in your wallet, sort of.
My final question for you would be, I believe in this new year, new mindset. We're just entering 2021, and there's a mindset that a lot of people have around the world, and that is that it's a dark, nefarious place. You shouldn't touch cryptocurrency. You shouldn't buy Bitcoin. So talk to us about mindset. What are some of the things or some of the questions we should be asking ourselves as we come to our new determination or come to our conclusion about this space?
I think you should look at that sort of mindset is something that, I would expect people to have back in 2009, 2010, when cryptocurrency kind of started taking, Bitcoin came around. The primary use of it was on the Silk Road to buy assets and goods for people that people didn't want to track and trade. Now we're in a stage where we're in a public space where cryptocurrency is used in, you can buy it using Square, you can buy it using PayPal, you can interact with it across so many sites and people and even banks, for example. So I think that it's dark and nefarious is something of the past. I think people need to look at what cryptocurrency allows you to do. It's like what tokens allow you to do. They allow you to hold on to your own cash. They allow you to be your own bank, be your own boss, like spend it however you want it, sort of thing. If you look at the wider economy, obviously there's quite a lot of things that are happening. Looking at how the Fed printed trillions of dollars last year for support, that ultimately devalues the US dollar even more. And in fact, people don't realize that by printing a lot of cash and having a lot of it means that you're technically devaluing your own currency by an unlimited supply. With traditional monetary policy that just kind of went out the window, that's something that shouldn't be happening, right? Every type of currency should be capped. And that's what Bitcoin is. Like, it's 21 million Bitcoin Cash, 21 million. It is a capped currency. It's not inflationary, so that, it retains its value. It's never going to be, you're not going to have 500 million Bitcoin out there, because then the price of Bitcoin will be zero or like whatever it is. Because when you have the ability to print unlimited dollars, and you have the ability to spend your unlimited dollars, which means everything becomes cheaper and your dollars worth less. And so when you look at the wider economic status of the world, I think, cryptocurrency is a good hedge against various policies across various regions of the world. And I think it's something that it's from the people that we speak to on the exchange side, it resonates with them that people are their own banks. People can control their own assets. They don't have to go to Wells Fargo, who's going to charge them like $10 every time you take something out of an ATM, or $100 per month just a membership fee. Like, for example, now in Switzerland, UBS is going to charge people with assets of $250,000 an interest fee just for keeping their money in the bank. Like, how does that even resonate? Like, if you're just keeping your money in the bank, you're paying the bank an interest rate on it rather than the other way around. You're giving them your assets and they're charging you to keep your assets, right? Like, that is not like an interest rate on your overall assets. Like, that's not how banking is supposed to be done. They're supposed to be thanking you for having your assets so they can loan it out elsewhere, et cetera. So we're headed into, you know, a whole new paradigm from a traditional economic perspective. And I think cryptocurrency and the blockchain space is a really good hedge against, where we might end up.
Great way of putting it. Thank you again, Donish, for coming on the Bitcoin.com podcast.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
You've listened to another episode of the Bitcoin.com podcast. Subscribe at news.bitcoin.com, where your journey begins.